Morning, Your Honors. Larry Roth for Hill Dermaceuticals. I'm going to go on a limb here and try to do my initial argument in 4 minutes. The main point, and I want to reserve and do not concede anything that we don't get to and would rely upon what we have in the initial brief and the reply brief. The two issues I want to focus on is the scalp oil and the ear oil. This is a case involving three generics to Hill's reference listed drugs on the scalp oil. In the citizen's petition and in Dr. Woodcock's memorandum, which the citizen's petition was based on, said that the scalp is different from the rest of the body. Hill's scalp oil is specially made, and to get absorbability, percutaneous absorption to the scalp, because the hair is different, although not much of mine is, but different from the rest of the body. And she said if there's a difference in formulation or difference in ratio, then the agency has to look at the generic product very carefully to make sure.
What are you referring to now?
The scalp oil.
No, she is who?
Dr. Woodcock, Janet Woodcock. They overruled the generic division, and who said that all you have to have is just plus or minus 5% difference in variations in the products. There's no question on this record that the Hill products are different than the generics. The generics do not have two
little fragrances.
Well, they're not so little, Your Honor, in the sense of that they have a purpose, and not just for odor, but they're also terpenes, which go to the issue of absorption. But even if you say they're nothing, for the scalp, Dr. Woodcock ruled, and the citizen petition says this, that the hair on the head is different from the rest of the body hair, except for certain areas like the underarms, and beard, and pubic hair. In those situations, you have terminus hair. It's thick and it's coarse. And if you have a different formulation or a different ratio, and the generics have
now,
to have...
Counsel, perhaps you just should focus on what you think is an error here.
That they did not do a careful review, as Dr. Woodcock said, and then she went on to say if there's a difference in formulation, there can be an effect upon the absorption, the ability of the active ingredient.
That is not the position of the department.
Yes, it is.
Isn't your argument that in order that they made a mistake in finding bioequivalence?
Well, it is a bioequivalence argument. Under 320.22B3III, you have to meet all those, and it's in conjunctive, you have to meet all of them. Basically, what I'm saying down to the core is that the generic scalp was not bioequivalent to the Hill product because they did not do a careful review, because they had different ingredients, as Dr. Woodcock said that you had to do, because they had no way of knowing because of the difference between the scalp.
Counsel, you're making a jury argument here. I don't understand the legal argument.
The legal argument is that they did not properly find, they're arbitrary and capricious, did not properly find that there was bioequivalency under the regulation, which is 21.320.22B3.
Because of what? Woodcock is a subordinate official there, is that what you're saying?
She is the head of CEDAR. She's the one.
She's not the decision maker here?
She is the decision maker.
So you say she made an error or not?
No, the Office of Generic Drugs made
which
the error.
Which is the office above her, I guess.
No, she's above everything.
Well, now I'm really confused. Are you saying that the department agreed with you?
She made a policy statement.
Wait a minute, the department agreed with you? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying the department, through the citizen's petition response and Dr. Woodcock, made...
The citizen's petition was back in 2004, right?
2009, March 25th.
Oh.
And she...
That's not the decision that's being reviewed.
What the decision being reviewed is the one from the district court that denied the permanent injunction.
Right, and that in turn reviewed a decision of the department whereby they approved the new drug.
Well, there's three drugs.
I know the three drugs. Okay, the approval of those three drugs is what's on appeal.
Yes, and okay. I'm talking only about one. They're all different drugs.
Yes, and I understand. There's the scalp, there's the skin, and there's the ear.
Right.
All right, but I'm trying to understand what Mrs. Woodcock's role is in this and why you're focusing.
She made the agency's policy statement that if you have a generic drug.
This is in response to the citizen's petition?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's not the ruling
but
that's on appeal.
But they violated.
Wait a minute, that's not the ruling on appeal, is it?
Yes.
No, the ruling on appeal is the approval of the new drug.
And that's because they did not follow the policy of the agencies, the agency's policy, which said that you have to have a careful review when you have a generic that's trying to imitate the reference listed drug if you don't have the same exact ingredients with regard to the scalp, because the scalp is unique. Scalp psoriasis is a unique disease that is affected by differences in formulations and ratios, and the RLD drug and the generic drug have different formulations. That's what I'm saying, and they made no careful review. All they did was they treated the same, all three drugs the same. They said the body oil drug and the scalp oil generic drug is the same. The only differences they have from Hill's products is that there is plus or minus 5% difference because of the absence of the fragrance. No determination of whether or not it would have an effect upon absorption into the scalp here, which the agency as a scientific policy said was different than the rest of the body, different from the ear, different from the hair on your body. And they didn't do that. All they did was they said, it's plus or minus 5% difference in variations, therefore it's the same drug. I'm saying that that was an arbitrary and capricious decision. It violated and did not follow the scientific decision and policy set forth by Dr. Woodcock. And because of that, they had no clue whether or not it would affect the scalp in any way and whether or not it ever even reached the scalp and be effective.
Counsel, I have a procedural question.
Yes,
sir. Why did you come into district court seeking an injunction? Isn't it a fact that you have an Administrative Procedures Act claim, do you not? And the appropriate, even if you were to establish that the FDA had committed an error, the proper response is remand to the agency to correct the error. I don't understand why you're seeking an injunction, why you sought an injunction. That's inappropriate.
It started out as a citizen's petition and...
No. The citizen's petition, and it was before the
they approved
the informal adjudication that you're appealing.
Yes, Your Honor. In October 17, 2011, they approved three generics.
I understand. As a matter of administrative law, the appropriate process is to come to federal court challenging the agency action. If you prevail, it is remanded back to the agency for proceedings not inconsistent with a legal decision of a court. There's no appropriate, there's not an appropriate situation for an injunction here.
Every case.
I'm going to ask the Civil Division why they even indulge it. I couldn't figure it out.
Every case there is, Your Honor, that I reviewed, when a generic is approved, you go to the district court and you ask for a preliminary injunction and or permanent injunction, wherever the case may be. There's no procedure to go back to the agency. And because that's a quasi-final decision.
You are seeking review under the APA, right?
But it's a quasi-proceeding, yes, and you review the record, and this court on appeal can review that record de novo. Everyone agrees to that. But there was no procedure, there's no course under 21 CFR Section 10 to go back to
You have a right under the APA. When the agency approved the three drugs, that wasn't informal adjudication. You have a right to come to district court because there's no provision to the Court of Appeals. The district court then sits as an appellate court reviewing agency action. It's not appropriate to seek an injunction at that point.
It is appropriate because you're trying to, Your Honor, enjoining the granting and asking for vacation and suspension of those granting of the ANDAs. There's no other procedure that was ever brought up in this case by anybody other than the procedure that we followed.
Under the citizen petition.
Well, the citizen petition became part of this case, right, because it has all the issues upon which this generic used as a roadmap, supposedly, to get their approvals.
Right.
That's why the citizen's petition is important to this case, to all three
drugs.
The citizen
petition was filed before the new drug application came in.
Yes, sir.
Obviously in anticipation of what was coming down the pike.
It set forth because...
Isn't that right? You were anticipating what was coming down the pike, so that's why...
At some point in time, sure.
Yeah.
And, in fact, there was three there at the time. And we filed the citizen petition because Hill wanted to change the way that topical corticosteroids were being reviewed. All other dermatology products, you have to do clinical tests, except for corticosteroid products, where all you do is a vasoconstrictor test, which where you rub the arm and you see what the reaction is in terms of the constriction of the blood vessels. Here, and Hill, and the citizen petition was partially granted to Hill's position on the scalp. They granted what Hill said had to, that the generic had to do on the scalp. So what it was the framework by which the generic drugs then applied less than about 2 weeks after the final decision was rendered March 25, 2009. On April 14, 2009, the generic filed their first ANDA on one of Hill's products based upon what the agency ruled in the citizen's petition. So that's how the citizen's petition becomes enveloped into this whole procedure. And that was the policy. That was a policy statement, the scientific statement that the agency made on all the issues that are involved in this case. And the major point is, several major points, they didn't follow. They didn't follow on the scalp oil. They used the wrong regulations on the ear, on the eardrops, the ear oil, and finally on the solution, they made no scientific determination. The solution is an overarching thing. What these three generics did not want to do under any circumstances is to do any type of test. And what we're saying is that they were not eligible for, on this record, for the self-evident bio waiver that they got, which is the free pass, you know, pass go, get you $200, that they got because of the violation of the policy on the scalp oil, the agency's decision on scalp, on what you have to do to get an equivalent generic. Secondly, on the ear oil, they used regulations that were plainly, erroneously interpreted that don't apply to the ear oil situation, and they used a bio-waiver, a provision, 320.24b6, that says you have that's in the context of all testing, and they did absolutely no testing whatsoever. All the government did, all the generic division did, that is, and the generic division I'm not sure ever met a ANDA they didn't like, but all they did was to say, oh, the only differences between these drugs, the Hill brand drug and the generic drugs, is the absence of two fragrances, which they concluded without anything else, just statements. We conclude that didn't make a difference because it was in 5% difference. So if you don't have two ingredients of a drug, you have to make it up. You have to make up that 100% someplace else. So that's why the formulation changes, the ratio changes, and that's why it's so important to the scalp. And on the solution issue, that's an overarching one, but we can win on the scalp and the ear products without the solution at all. And if we win on the solution issue, then that's overarching, because the solution is it either is or it isn't. They didn't do a scientific review of the solution decision. They did an administrative review. And on all those grounds, we submit that these three drugs were improperly approved. And this court can look at that record, the administrative record, de novo, and make the legal decisions or legal conclusions from that, even if it's different from the same conclusions that the district court looked at. So you look at it afresh if we put cases in there. Okay? I said I was going on the limb on 4 minutes. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Cindy Cho and I represent the FDA and other federal appellees. Like counsel for Hill, I will focus my argument on one issue, whether FDA's determination that the generic drugs were bioequivalent to Hill's drugs was arbitrary and capricious.
Let me ask you a couple of preliminary questions. Are you aware of our rules that strongly urge parties not to use acronyms that are not normally known by lawyers?
Yes.
And?
I will endeavor not to use any acronyms during this argument.
No, I'm talking about your brief, counsel.
Yes.
Were you aware of the rule at the time you wrote the brief?
I believe I had reviewed the rules, and I apologize for any deviation from them.
I suppose you can get by with NDA and ANDA. They become pretty common. But you have a number of acronyms which are really quite labored, and it's almost impossible to read the brief without running back and forth to glossary. You can use one word. Read Supreme Court opinions. They avoid acronyms like the plague. I don't know why this has become such a problem with young lawyers, but we have tried to suggest, please don't do it. And we would think the civil division would read our rules. That's the first question. Now, the second question is, why the devil don't you come into federal district court and say, wait a minute, the request for an injunction is inappropriate. This is a review of agency action.
The reason we didn't do that is because my understanding of Hill's lawsuit was that they were challenging the agency's approval of a generic
drug. Of course,
that's
an informal adjudication. The district judge is sitting, in effect, as an appellate judge, and that he's reviewing agency action.
Yes, and that agency action was final. As a result, we don't oppose lawsuits that...
No, you're not opposing the lawsuit. The question is whether it's appropriate to seek an injunction. It isn't. We've said that in opinions a few times. It's an extraordinary situation where a court would issue an injunction in reviewing agency action. If you find an error, you could identify the error, remand it back to the agency, because the agency might take a different path to come out to the same position, which might be legal. You're with me as a matter of administrative law, aren't you?
Yes, the appropriate remedy would be a remand to the agency.
Then why didn't you tell the district judge an injunction is inappropriate?
Well, in conjunction with that, would you remind me, in these cases, is it not accurate that parties do come in to block the approval pending further review? Isn't that what's happening?
Yes, what happened here was...
This isn't an unusual request, is it?
That's right. It's not unusual.
Yes, I recognize it, but I do think... This pattern may have developed, but it's inconsistent with administrative law, isn't it?
They're trying to block the generic from getting on the board, right?
Pending, is what appears to be the case.
As opposed to some of the other administrative, maybe I'm trying to figure out why this happens. They don't want the generic out on the market.
Yes.
And they're trying, and so, fine, you may send it back, but meanwhile, you're asking the district court, it's the only place that has authority, stop them, don't let them let this approval be final and let that generic on the market until you've looked at it and hopefully send it back and make them review it. Is that right?
That's the idea. Okay. Yes. Going on to the bioequivalence issue, a generic drug maker is entitled to a waiver of not bioequivalence itself, but the clinical evidence submission requirement to establish bioequivalence. In order to receive that waiver, the generic drug maker must meet the following three criteria. First, that the drug is a solution for application to the skin. Second, that it contains the same active ingredients in the same concentration and dosage form. And third, that it contain no inactive ingredient or difference in formulation that would significantly affect the absorption of the drug. Only the first and the third criteria are at issue here. And starting with the first, whether the generic drugs are solutions, the record fully supports the agency's determination that they were. The generic drug maker, of course, submitted an abbreviated new drug application in which they described their own product in a way that comported with the United States Pharmacopeial Convention definition of solution. FDA noted that and placed that reason in its review. In addition, the generic drug makers' development reports describe the process by which they formulated their drugs. That process also goes towards the drugs being solutions. An active ingredient is dissolved in isopropanol, the solvent, and then placed in oils where it remains.
What about he, on oral argument, he has focused only on one issue, hasn't he? The scalp, largely. And he hasn't made the solution argument here. He said if he wins on that, he wins across the board. But that isn't what he's relying on here. What about the specific arguments he's making here, which I gather relies on the Woodcock view?
First of all, the decision to approve a generic drug is not any one individual within the FDA's decision. It's the agency's decision. And addressing the scalp oil issue itself, that discussion in the FDA citizen petition response was based on the situation that if the generic drug does not establish bioequivalence through a waiver, then you go on to a discussion of how do they do that. And that's where Dr. Woodcock weighed in with how a generic drug maker would establish bioequivalence if they didn't meet the waiver requirements.
So you're saying if my aunt had wheels, she'd be a trolley car, because in this case, there was a waiver of the bioequivalence.
Yes, that's right.
So his argument is irrelevant.
That's correct. And so the real question is whether the waiver was proper.
Right.
And I would argue that, yes, it was proper. It was a solution. And going to the last criteria issue that I mentioned, the inactive ingredients or the deletion of the two fragrances. That deletion is plainly acceptable under the bio-waiver regulation, as well as a separate regulation that governs the whole abbreviated new drug application process. It allows for those types of changes as long as they don't affect safety or efficacy. And the record shows that once again, FDA carefully considered whether the deletion would affect safety, efficacy, or as I mentioned earlier, absorption. You can see that in the abbreviated new drug application, the generic drug maker explained that they deleted these fragrances because they could cause irritation to patients with sensitivities. The fragrances themselves are in very low concentrations, and they don't contribute to the pharmacology of the drug. FDA reviewed and evaluated that application. They put on the record the reasons why they found it persuasive. They also confirmed that the fragrances were a tiny part of the total volume of the product. They consulted within different divisions. They determined that another guidance also applied here that allows for exactly these kinds of differences. In its briefs, Hill also argues that the volume differences in other inactive ingredients renders the agency's grant of bio-waiver faulty. And in fact, the only record evidence that supports Hill's argument that these slight changes in the volume of the other inactive ingredients could have any effect is one affidavit. And that affidavit was submitted by Hill in support of its citizen petition. In the affidavit, their purported expert makes the conclusory statement that a slight change in product formulation could affect the drug itself. FDA specifically considered that affidavit and rejected it in the citizen petition response, stating that the generic product need not be exactly the same as a reference-listed drug, and instead referred to its regulations and said that any changes in inactive ingredients were permissible if they did not affect safety or efficacy. And in fact, the differences in volume of the inactive ingredients between the generic drug and Hill's drugs is very small, and smaller than the differences in Hill's own batch-to-batch productions. The bottom line here is that the record shows FDA's careful consideration of the deletion of the two fragrances. As a result, the grant of a bio waiver for the body and scalp oil was not arbitrary and capricious. Unless the court has any further questions, I would submit that the evidence in the record fully supports FDA's decision here to approve the generic drugs. And for all these reasons, along with those contained in the government's brief, this court should affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you failed to do your argument in 4 minutes or even 10, but we'll give you 1 minute.
With regard to the solution, there wasn't one scientific test, and we don't in any way weigh this, wasn't one scientific test done to establish that the Hill products are solutions. In fact, they cannot be solutions. And the agency had said that. They said they are immiscible liquids. There's to be a solution, everything, molecules all have to be bound up. In the Hill product, it's not. The active ingredient is put into alcohol and then oil.
Question whether the ANDA is a solution.
If they are a solution, Hill's products is not a solution, and there's not sameness under 355J. There have to be the same drugs unless they petition, which they didn't petition here. I urge if you want to send this back and set new precedent to the FDA, we will gladly participate in that process because we did not participate in the first process.
An informal adjudication.
Secondly,
you're very gracious in suggesting you'd like to participate.
I would ask that you grant go ahead grant the permanent injunction on the two drugs, even on the solution in our briefs. I think we have more than enough. If not, send it back and let once and for all the science determine whether or not it's a solution or not, and we'll go back to the district court on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.